gentlemen, and welcome to this Epic Film Guys minisode, our review of 10 Cloverfield Lane. It is Monday, the 21st of March, 2016, and our own Epic Film Guy, Justin, will be sitting down in about 12 hours for his advanced screening of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Our Man of Steel special episode will air in our normal time slot on Thursday, but in order to cut down the runtime of that episode just a little bit, and just to kind of fill the content gap here, thought we'd take our review from 10 Cloverfield Lane that we recorded for that episode and spin it here as a little mini-sode for you. So I'll go ahead and play that review for you, and then I'll be back when it's all said and done.
Before we get to the Man of Steel retrospective, both you and I had the opportunity, I would say a great opportunity, to check out Dan Trachtenberg's 10 Cloverfield Lane.
And
I know
we did.
You took the time to prepare a pretty good thought out review of the film, and I'd like to hear what you have to say, my friend.
All right. Well, yeah, I did. I punched out a few quick paragraphs on this, and I'd actually like to hear your feelings on this. Spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen the film, I'm not going to talk about all the spoilers, and I'm not going to spoil the way the film ends, but I will talk about a couple things, okay? So 10 Cloverfield Lane caused two completely different reactions in me initially. Right? On one hand, I was extremely disappointed by the lack of connections to the first film. Howard worked for the same company responsible for waking up the Cloverfield monster. That was it. All right, it seems like a quick cash grab to try to tie it into Cloverfield, knowing that the shock marketing and the really secretive production would drive up interest as much as it did with Matt Reeves' film. This movie apparently takes place in a world where the events of the Cloverfield attack actually never happened, because it's kind of a parallel universe or whatever. It doesn't make any fucking sense, JJ. All right, I get it. They didn't want to tie it to the first, but they wanted to create a film that had a similar feeling, but was still altogether its own thing. So after my initial disappointment and my initial anger with it, I was fine with it. All right, the second reaction I had was complete exhilaration. What a fantastic film this was. All right, so from the opening scene, you learn so much about Michelle without any dialogue. You learn so much about her character. The film just keeps ratcheting up the tension. She wakes up in this bunker. She meets Howard and Emmett, and they insist that some kind of attack has happened, and they have to stay sealed down in the bunker. Howard claims he saved her after a car accident, but she will not trust him. And then she really draws his ire on more than one occasion. The tension builds and builds, and then she cracks that bottle open his head. You see that shot in the trailer. And she tries to escape, and then she's stopped at the last moment by something that really shocks her. Okay, so several elements in this film work extremely well, from Trachtenberg's excellent interior shots of the bunker. At first, he makes it a really claustrophobic and dark and kind of foreboding place. And then later on in the film, as the tone shifts, it's more fun, it's inviting, it's a really homey kind of place. The script really keeps you guessing throughout the runtime on whether or not Howard's being honest, what he's hiding, what's really going on, what really happened, etc., etc., etc. It shifts tone abruptly a few times. It goes kind of from this intense psychological thriller to this quirky family comedy to an intense horror film. All right. And each time the shift for me feels natural. It feels like it's earned. The script has really naturally driven the characters in those directions. And Justin, I know you're going to agree with this. That's thanks in no small part to amazing performances by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And how fucking brilliant is John Goodman in this film? Holy shit, what a performance out of him. I've been a big Goodman fan since his Roseanne days. He was great in that show, and he is picture perfect in this. Quick side note off of the review, this dude has lost half of his weight from this film.
He is monstrous
in this, and he was on Howard Stern a week ago promoting it. Dude looks amazing.
He's had a lot of ups and downs. He's really had a lot of them.
Yep, but you know, his performance is packed so full of nuance that it would take numerous viewings just to analyze the depths of that performance. It really would. He's equal parts kidnapper and survivalist with this intense vitriol and like this equal whimsy, you know? So make no mistake, Justin, this film pulls you to the edge of your seat and it keeps you perched there as you keep investing in these characters. Reminds me of the tension that I felt when I was watching Argo, the way that it just kept going, or The Dark Knight, as we discussed in last week's podcast.
Exactly.
the film does it effortlessly, and not since Ex Machina last year have so few characters been so thoroughly engrossing. A testament to the director, the script, and the amazing actors in the film. As Michelle moves through the plot, there are just several moments when, I don't know about you, Justin, but I was almost like pumping my fist for Michelle as she just grew into a stronger, more self-assured character. And then she finally escapes the bunker and learns the truth. A lot of people really feel that the ending was kind of cheap and tacked on. I don't feel it was cheap at all. I think it was incredibly earned. She has gained that strength of character and she's earned it. Okay, so it's not related to the original film. That's true. Okay, it doesn't have anything to do with the Cloverfield monster or anything that happened in that first film. Don't let that rob you from what is, it's an early contender for me for a best of the year list, a top 10 of the year list. Yeah. Goodman and Widstead, performances that have to be seen to be believed. And Justin, my rating for this film, and then I want to hear your thoughts on what I just said. I'm giving this a 9 out of 10. I fucking loved this film. It was amazing. It did. Your friend, Brian from the 10 Bucks to Throw podcast, he actually spoiled this for both of us.
He definitely did. And on here's, Facebook. Here's a big call out to you, Brian, because you did. You did. Your initial reaction after seeing it before opening night was, this has nothing to do with Cloverfield.
Yep.
Which definitely gave me a preconceived notion of, well, should I see this film?
I already had my tickets, so it pissed me off knowing I already had my tickets because I had no context
the
for that.
The trailer doesn't tell you that. That's the key thing. If you watch only the trailers and you don't read anything and you're not a spoiler hog, by watching the trailer, there's no way that you'd be able to tell that this is not connected directly to the first Cloverfield film. But for me to speak my thoughts a little bit, Nick, I have to give a huge, huge amount of respect for Dan Trachtenberg, knowing that he is a first-time director of a major motion picture. He's done a short, one episode of a TV series, and then some short from actually the year that I graduated high school. The guy's basically a no-namer, and he came in and directed one of the best, I would say, thriller-slash-science-fiction-slash-drama films that I've seen in years.
Wasn't it great how many genres film kind of mashed together?
It had everything. Exactly. You said it. I couldn't have said it better. It did have, it had drama, it had horror, it had mystery, it had science fiction, it had family comedy.
Now, you know what? I want to jump in on that, actually, because I know you're our horror guy. And the horror stuff in this film, like the horror elements of this, really blew me away. I thought they were great. So I want to know what you thought about those.
It kicked me in the face immediately. As soon as this film started, and that, you know, you just got this vibe. You just felt something. You knew that it was going to, honestly, I was shocked immediately. Like, I knew it was going to be different than what I had previously thought. So as soon as the film started, Nick, I kind of left, you know, that idea that Brian ruined. Sorry, Brian, I'm calling you out, buddy. But I left that out of my head. Mm-hmm. I left that out of my head because I felt something that I haven't felt in a long time. Something that I feel out of, you know, one out of a handful of films. And that's an extreme tension. And as you mentioned in your review, Nick,
great.
The whole beginning, the opening scene opens with no dialogue. It's completely silent except for the amazingly chilling score. Mm-hmm. I fucking love that score so much. It's honestly a huge throwback to old Hitchcock films. This film reminded me of a modern take on what a Hitchcock film should be.
I would agree.
It had the mystery. It had the suspense. Awesome suspense in this film. Like, I legitimately had goosebumps, Nick, and moved to the edge of my seat. That happens rarely because I did not have any idea what was happening next.
It reminded me exactly of the way I felt when I was watching Argo, like the way that this film just keeps ratcheting up the tension to where you're so invested in what's going on the screen. You're just like, you're literally like digging the nails into the armrests and stuff. And you're like, dude, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? I love it when a film can really surprise me like that. And yeah, this film definitely does it.
To throw that out there, I did want to mention the man's name, who was the composer and did the score for the film. His name is Bear McCreary. Surprisingly, he did music for The Walking Dead, the Battlestar Galactica television series, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Had no idea you could do those pieces and then do something so amazing in this film. Honestly, so far this year, that's my favorite score I've heard within a film.
I would agree.
After seeing the film, Nick, I had absolutely no problem with the fact that it did not tie directly to the first Cloverfield. Honestly, for me, I still felt like it could be, even though it's not within the same realm or world.
Still think it could be if they wanted to tie it into it.
I'm a huge fan of like old school Tales from the Crypt or Tales from the Dark Side or anthology series, you know, where there's these different pieces of the puzzle that kind of attach to each other loosely, but are their own thing. And that's what this felt like to me. And I really liked that Cloverfield line in the title really is just kind of taking it back to, like, you know, the Tales from the Crypt or, you know, many other Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone was a huge, huge thing that I thought of when I watched this. Yeah. You know, hey, you're watching a Cloverfield film episode. So for me, John Goodman, so far, I will say this, Nick, my favorite performance of the year so far. Man, out of this good world. The man, best.
Fuck, was he good.
Best performance in decades. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I absolutely adored her in the film. She was so convincing, so great. And even John Gallagher Jr., who played Emmett, used a very small role, but they still fleshed that character out. I mean, think of it. We only have a handful of characters.
He was still so great to watch, and he had that kind of permanent look on his face the whole time, and he was kind of stuck in one gear the whole movie. Not to say that detrimentally, because I really enjoyed his character, but he was really kind of stuck in one gear, and I think they did that intentionally to make Winstead and Goodman stand out even more, and it was just so good.
It was
so good. But I loved Winstead in this. I thought she was a wonderful heroine. I thought she was amazing. But man, was Goodman. He was so fucking good.
He made the film.
He was so good.
They knew that when they got him. Like, I feel like he's the centerpiece of this film. As you said, you know, there's so many parts of
the best thing is when he gave that interview on Howard Stern, this is like the most humble fucking dude on the planet. Like, he literally, like, you could tell he's the kind of guy, like the kind of actor, like, that you would want to just sit down and have a beer with him. Like,
I
That's what he sounded like. Not like, you know, there's those other actors where you'd just be like, oh, I just want to meet him. I just want to see him. But you know that you could never touch him. You know, you could never like hang with him or anything. But Goodman really feels like that kind of guy to me, like where he just fucking chill and have a beer and would just be a normal guy who is also worth, you know, like $50 million.
He is. And I want to throw this out there. Like, honestly, one of my favorite things about Trumbo when I watched that earlier this year is Goodman. I know you haven't seen that yet, but
he was one of my favorite parts of. He was in The Artist a few years back.
He was. And he was in Argo.
Yeah. You know?
Honestly, he plays a lot of the similar characters, honestly, in The Artist, in Argo, and in Trumbo. He's a very similar character, but he's so good. Anytime you see him, you're like, oh, this film has.
He's become a really good character actor in his old age. Yeah, he really has.
But to throw this out there, I liked everything about the film. Yeah. And quick side note, not sure if you knew this. You probably didn't. A lot of fans don't. But the character Michelle's fiance or soon-to-be ex-fiance in the film, he was voiced by Bradley Cooper, yep. Which I didn't know until I looked into him. It's like, that voice sounded so damn familiar. I'm like, who is that?
Yeah, I had to read about it afterward.
But overall, and again, we are not going to spoil the film for you guys that haven't seen it yet. I highly recommend seeing this film in the cinema. Definitely support this movie. But the ending for me, huge payoff. And I won't tell you. I honestly did not see that end coming. For me, I didn't.
Neither did I.
The film pumped itself up so hard that like I just felt a certain way about how it was going to end. And then when the ending hit, I'm like, no shit, you just threw me a curveball. Like,
the best thing about the script. Yeah, the best thing about the script is it keeps you guessing. Like, you have no idea. Once she gets out of that bunker, you have no idea what's going to happen because the film, it constantly feeds you all sorts of information that can be taken any number of directions. You know, any number of different things that you can think of. And that's the greatness of it. And it really, really keeps you guessing. And I want to watch it again just so I can see if I can pick up anything that I missed. Because I know there has to be something. I'm sure
there has to be.
You know, but I want to hear your rating on this because we got to move on. Of course,
we definitely do.
Steel piece, but
we definitely do.
I absolutely love this, and I'm glad to hear that you loved it too. I really, really. When I saw this, I felt that you would love it. And to anybody that's listening to this, don't. It's not related to the original film. It's not. Yeah, get over it.
Don't allow that to ruin your experience. Don't ruin it at all. It didn't me.
Yeah, you'll forget about it by the time you finish watching this movie. It's so good, you won't care anymore.
Guess what, Nick? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say this. Hey, I'll be honest. I like this film better than I like the first original Cloverfield film.
I agree. Yeah,
100%. I'm being completely honest there. I mean, 100%. This is more my kind of film. When the first Cloverfield came out, you know, I like Kaiju, I like giant monsters. Everyone knows what that film was. Everyone knows that I don't like found footage, but I still gave it a shot, and I still enjoyed it for the most part. But for me, this is more my type of film. Great thriller, mystery, drama, great character-driven, well-written, well-scored, well-directed, beautifully shot. It feels extremely closed in and claustrophobic during a lot of the parts in the film. And I love how you mentioned that, you know, within the tone, when it changes, it opens that up. It makes, you know, the wider shots of the bunker and stuff. So absolutely loved it. I can't agree more, Nick. I hate that we do this all the time, but dude, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 because I like this movie. And everyone out
what
there listening,
what is wrong with us, man? Ever since Star Wars, we've been agreeing on pretty much everything. I don't know what's going on with that, man. I don't.
I hope we disagree on something. I don't know.
You're gonna hate Batman versus Superman. You're gonna think it's the worst film of the year.
yeah. I actually probably will. Yeah, but that's what we have left for that film, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen 10 Cloverfield Lane by the time this episode hits,
see it.
Do yourself a favor and see the film. But we're gonna take a really quick promo break right now before we get into our Man of Steel retrospective, and we'll be right back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it here for this minisode review of 10 Cloverfield Lane. You can, as always, find all of our reviews, all of our episodes of the podcast, everything over at our website, www.epicfilmguys.com. You can find our podcast on Podbean, on Stitcher, on Spreaker, and of course, you can rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Please, please, please do. It will help us grow, and we will be immensely grateful. Stay tuned on Thursday, the 24th, for our Man of Steel retrospective that will fall in our normal time. In a mere 12 hours or so after it lands, Justin and myself will be sitting down in that six-story, 4K laser-projected IMAX and watching Batman versus Superman, and then seeing it again the next morning. And then we're going to be recording our review together. I'm really excited for that. But until then, we'll see you at the movies. No, listen, you gotta do it just like me. WENBC. My voice cracked when
WENBC.
I just hit puberty, apparently.
WENBC.
WENBC. Now, go ahead and I'm hitting puberty. That's what we're gonna take away from tonight's episode. Son of a bitch. All right.
Just, I'll still pretend it's like it's the first time when you're holding my hand. Maybe I'll put your hand on my pants and then we'll pretend like it's the first time. No, wait, get out. Nope, not now. Worst time ever. Get out.
I've never heard you actually fight him off like that before.
All right, it's getting easier, Nick. Ladies and gentlemen, the medication's working, the treatment's working.
When I come down there, I'm stealing that medication. He's the biggest draw of our show right now.
No, he's going to ruin this episode.